Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey there, everybody. You're listening to the Alt in Our Stars, Billboard's alternative rock music podcast, whatever you want to call it. I feel like in today's episode, we may veer a little bit off of those genres, but really, what does genre even mean anyway these days? I am here with two writer friends of mine who I'm very excited to have on the show. They are amazing, famous superstars. We have Jill Mapes.
Hi, how's it going?
Jill of Flavor Wire fame, former Billboard fame.
You're throwing around the word fame in a way that's making me feel a little uncomfortable, but thank
you. Does fame make you uncomfortable?
Not when it's applied to other people. Anyway, Marie is also here. Marie,
I thought you were going to say flame, which I kind of liked. Billboard flame. It's romantic.
I had a flame. Can you call it a flame?
Billboard
it lasted
flame.
Like 2 years. I don't know if it's quite a flame. And Maria, who is also of Billboard fame. I don't know.
Once upon a time. Still kind of.
Basically, what we're saying is Jill hired us as interns like 5 years
You're
ago.
You're really going into this. Yeah, that's so funny.
Yeah. People need to know the characters.
When we were children.
When we were teens.
They were adorable.
Hashtag teens.
I was a teen.
You're still
a teen. Yeah,
I was
teen.
In fact a teen.
You're still a teen.
Thank you.
Anyway, we're going to talk about some music, yeah?
Yeah, teen music. No, I'm kidding. We're not. We might talk about some teen. I'm like teasing Maria so much right now.
Ready.
So, our conversation today is mid-year music. We could honestly have this conversation at any point in the year, but hey, it's June, middle of the year, and all of us cover a lot of music. And I think it would be interesting to sort of see where we're at, because working in the music industry as writers, we sort of get like thrown on the spot in December to come up with these year-end lists, maybe like November if you're super thirsty and someone's pushing you for firsties to put out that list like November, first week of November, here's my year-end list.
Because you know Taylor Swift will own December.
Yeah.
No,
it's as were the case last year. Oh, was it?
It's always October.
Wow. Okay, never mind. Whatever. I don't know what I'm talking about.
We're not talking about Taylor Swift.
I'm sorry. Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, so wanted to talk about favorite albums of the year so far, favorite songs of the year. And aside from that, just talk about what has you interested, what you think is important for the conversation about music coming from, like, alternative music, which could really be, like, guitar music. It could be weird R&B music, could be like left of center electronic music. I like to use that term like pretty fluidly, pretty loosely, because like as I want to get into a little bit, the term like rock is kind of a little bit more difficult now to get into that conversation. So what I wanted to open talking about is how, you know, all of us either right now or in the past, I think all of us right now pretty much do a good amount of coverage of guitar music in our lines of work. And, you know, I'm like the rock guy on the Billboard staff for .com, and like I'll always try to like push it more towards alternative, like, oh, I'm like the alternative music person, because like honestly, like being called like the rock guy kind of makes you feel like kind of lame
like days. Like you're a rockist, like you're a curmudgeon,
the rockist guy.
Yeah, And you're not that guy.
It's very close to dad rock is what
the dad
I get when
guy.
I hear rock guy. Like,
the
you're
Wilco,
the Foo Fighters.
The Wilco guy. Yeah. Because it's Billboard and, you know, you have to look at the things that are popular, and a lot of rock and roll that's popular is, like, maybe not the most cutting edge.
Or it's just, like, new news being dug up about, like, Guns N' Roses and Motley Crue.
Right.
Or it's just that. Like, music that is literally old and is being dug up because of, like, random disagreements and beefs and stuff like that. So what do you think, guys, think, what do you think it takes for rock music nowadays to be in that mainstream discussion, to be relevant?
Well, I think sort of what I was mentioning before we got on to record is this idea of forcing people to have a conversation about the work. I don't think it's enough to just put out a great album and have it not spark something deeper in people or force them to confront something or reframe a conversation. And I think there's a couple of really great albums that would fall under alternative. They wouldn't necessarily fall under rock because they're more folk leaning. They came out this year that really forced people to feel uncomfortable. The Sufjan Stevens record, Carrie and Lowell, and the Father John Misty record, I Love You Honey Bear, are both so honest that they just make you feel uncomfortable in two very different ways. And so they sort of force a conversation. I think that's sort of what it takes is like, let me confront you with a lot of honesty and you'll sort of respond to it, hopefully.
Yeah. And like, Jill, you might have to take lead on this one because I've heard both records a couple times and I haven't really dove too deep into either one of them, but it seems like what could be like the winning ticket for them in like being in that discussion is because maybe more mainstream music, more pop music, popular hip hop, because it's so popular, the lyricists aren't able to go that deep.
I mean, that's always been the case for independent music, you know, over popular music, is that there's a certain realness there that when you're not worried about packaging it for, you know, a certain kind of audience or a certain kind of demographic, that there is more inherent honesty, you know? I mean, that's definitely a part of it. But with these records, just a little background, the Sufjan record, he wrote about his mother, his relationship with his mother, which is very complicated. She passed away a few years ago after a pretty intense illness, and he had been estranged from her for a number of years, and she had a lot of mental illness. She struggled with her entire life and drug addiction and was in and out of his life, and the only time she was really a constant was these few years that she was married to this guy Lowell, who actually runs Sufjan's Asthmatic Kitty. He actually runs Asthmatic Kitty now.
His label.
Yeah, his label. And so it's just this like crazy record where Sufjan forces himself to confront like all of the fucked up shit about his mom and confront like, is he like her and what are his feelings about her and all this stuff. And on the flip side, the Father John Misty record is like, whew, that's like, he is on the brink of getting married and is this sort of Lothario, like womanizer, rock and roll sort of you know, Valley sort of figure, Laurel Canyon guy.
Former Fleet Fox.
Yeah, former Fleet Fox. And he's writing from the perspective of, like, I have found salvation through this woman, and I am, like, made a good man, but here are all the disgusting parts about me that I have to confront now that I'm committing myself to love and being saved by love. Yeah, they're very different, but they sort of do the same thing for me, where they, like, force you to confront something.
I think that's pretty interesting. I'm not a big folk person, so I've only heard these records, like, once or twice. But kind of go back with Sufjan, and I feel like I've heard more about this record than, I guess, I've heard from him in a while.
Yeah, like, since the States Project.
Yeah, I'm wondering, is it because it has this sort of, like, immediate sort of emotional response that it's evoking from people, Are there certain songs that kind of do that for you?
Yeah, I think that it is because of that. But also, he did a few projects that were very more electronic. And I think the consensus...
More polarizing.
Yeah, people were...
Him dressing up like a bird and having like planets flashing behind him in concerts.
Yeah, and just doing a lot of experimentations with synthesizers and drum machines and things that were not... Very different from Save's project and very different from Seven Swans. And people were, it's very polarizing. That's a very diplomatic word for it. And I think people were happy to see him get back to, to what he's sort of more known for. But then he sort of has this great message on top, a great message. It's not like uplifting, but a strong message top of it. Yeah.
Yeah. And I also think him and Father John Mystere are both like two such strong like personalities. And kind of going back to the rock thing, I think they're like, a million good rock songs out there, but I feel like there aren't like these characters, these people who are really like saying something or doing something interesting. I feel like a lot of that is why, I don't know, guitars are antiquated.
Mm.
Yeah, the personality aspect of it is so crucial, I feel like. And that's why I think maybe it's easier for pop to sort of inherently have a leg up in this sort of social-driven music environment is because these are characters. They become they're almost like caricatures, and they're the new rock stars, you know. And it takes somebody like a Father John Misty or like a Mac DeMarco or somebody that has a big over-the-top personality, and people love that or they hate that, but at least you have some sort of reaction.
Yeah, see, a lot of what I've picked up on from working at Billboard on Seth for a couple of years is how like. Which I didn't really realize as much when I was very much like a college radio indie person, was just like what you're saying, this cult of personality is what drives pop stars. It's like, of course the music is important, and it's always, it's never, even if you go back to like the Beatles, it's never like, quote, always been about the music. Like people's personal lives and what makes them interesting, what makes their fans project onto them has always been a huge part of like why we love popular music, why we love our performers.
It's the celebrity factor, you know, and sometimes it doesn't have to be the most shallow thing in the world. I don't think, you know, there is a sense of performance in celebrity and big personality, you know.
Yeah, so we have that for rock becoming relevant. Another man,
kind of, yeah, wow, that's kind of so hard.
We'll rephrase.
Rock guy.
So how can we say that? What do you said diplomatic before? What do you think would be a diplomatic way of saying that?
I think you should
justice for rock.
How it's sort of like what it takes to be
get
a
in
rock
the discussion.
Star. Yeah, what it takes.
Yeah,
to
that,
be,
yeah, that's what we're getting at.
Yeah, to be in the discussion.
Yeah, so we have. The personality, the celebrity aspect, big or small, because like Father John Misty and Sufjan Stevens aren't like massive celebrities that tons of people would recognize on the street. So we have the personality side of things to enter the discussion. What about working with other genres? Because something I pick up on is that because we're in like a hip hop age now, or you could also make an argument we're in an EDM age. Those are sort of the themes, the signifiers that dominate popular culture. Do you guys think in some way when an alternative or a rock artist implements those signifiers into their music, those influences, do you think that helps them get into the discussion?
Well, I think there's a good way to do it and a bad way to do it. There's a really obvious way that you're trying to like get a crossover. You're trying to appeal to a different audience. But I think incorporating different elements is super key. Like I look at a band like Alabama Shakes, who that first record was, it was a very solid record, you know, but it was a specific sort of thing, and it was like, okay, I understand what the limits of this band seem to be, what their strengths are, and sort of what they're going for. And then the record Sound and Color they put out earlier this year is just blows all of those boundaries away. And I was having a discussion with some other music folks, and they were like, I don't even know that I could call that a rock record. You know, it is a rock record because they're a rock band, but it's so soulful and so, it's so Stax record. It's so, you know, vintage and informed by all of the R&B and blues and even the psychedelia that was happening like in the late 60s, you know, that it makes something different, you know, it's not, it's not what you expect.
Yeah, it's like with you know, like what I was saying with showing the EDM or the hip hop influence in your music and coming off like current or whatever you want to call it that way. Mm-hmm. There's absolutely a right way and a wrong way to do it. Probably you have a lot more to lose than gain in playing that game. So you have to be smooth. You have to like get it. One that always comes to mind for me is like they're one of my favorite bands, Vampire Weekend. Something that impresses me so much about them is that without being like thirsty or without trying so much, the band, especially Ezra, the frontman, gets hip hop and implements hip hop into their music in such a clever, seamless way that I think that really, really helps them pull off what they do in this day and age.
Well, he's sort of a fluid music personality. Like, you look at the stuff that he did with Subtract last year. I loved his song with Subtract, New Dorp, New mm-hmm. York, which...
He went out and performed it with them at Governor's Ball.
Yeah, and he's, like, on stage with Chromeo, and mm-hmm. he's more of a... He's representative, I think, of how people actually consume music, which is they're not, you know, they're not... on these sort of genre lines, they aren't like, I'm a rock guy, so I only listen to rock. Like, yeah. He is very fluid in his fandom, and I think his personality as a musician and his personality as a music fan are like one and the same in that sense.
It's kind of interesting when people find it surprising that like a rock quote unquote musician is interested in other genres, because I feel like it's usually like the rock guys that people have these sort of like weird boundaries.
Yeah, why do they think that, like, you can only like one style of music? This is such an antiquated idea.
But I think talking to a lot of rock musicians and just people in the rock industry, a lot of them are like that still.
Yeah, but I think that there's a lot of stuff that gets called rock or alternative, and it's just, it's navigating so many things at once that it's hard to, like, you know, say definitively what it is. You know, mm-hmm. we can sort of think of it. I think sometimes we call things rock because a certain kind of people make it, or it's on a certain yeah. kind of label, or they're touring with this kind of person. But mm. it's a lot more, you know, dicey, I think. Mm. I don't know.
Well, even with, like, subgenres of rock, so you think of, like, with, like, the Paramore self-titled record, they're not a pop-punk band anymore, but they're still going to...
Yeah, neither is yeah. Fall Out Boy, but yeah. still, like, people will call them that, just because that's yeah. what their lineage traces back to.
Yeah, I mean, we can bemoan this. I feel like musicians bemoan this so yeah. much, but rock is, like, a really complicated idea, you know? Mm-hmm. I don't think it's terribly fashionable to call yourself a rock musician in this day and age. I would argue somebody like Florence is actually sort of like, especially her new record, she's worked with Marcus Straus. Like, she's trying, it's has hints of being a rock record. I think mm-hmm. like that's kind of where she's going to go, but she's a pop star. So it's like the way people get framed and branded is so subjective.
Yeah.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Yeah, totally. But what I was getting at with, like, still seeing these, like, sort of genre prejudices embedded in rock music, like, for instance, I was covering Ryan Adams' set at Governor's Ball this year, and there was sort of, like, iffy sound set up where there were two headlining stages going on simultaneously, and Deadmau5 was playing across the festival, but in between songs, during Ryan's, like, quieter songs, you could hear, like, the bass thumping across the stage. So finally he's about to break into Oh My Sweet Carolina, which is a super soft song, and you can hear the bass a lot, and he just goes, like, man, like, fuck that fuck that computer music, that robot music.
Oh, he did that. He did like a Dave Grohl, Win Butler.
Jack White.
Like,
the exact line was, he's like, this is a song you can't make on your iPhone. And everyone, pretty much everyone, a rousing round of applause from the people there. So that just goes.
Well, because those are Ryan Adams fans in the crowd. Like, of course we're going to clap at that.
Yeah, it's but I'm standing there thinking, like, wow, like, I'm, like, reading, like, think pieces and reading criticism and thinking, like, oh, people don't think like this anymore. But then it's like, oh, yeah, they do.
People, they do. But I feel like we're maybe at the end of exhausting those thoughts, you know. I hope we're at the end of it. I don't know. What do you think, Maria? Do you think we're living in a – we're nearing a post-rockism?
Well, I'm hoping people who are having these conversations are kind of leaving that dialogue behind us. But I think that mentality, like, there will always be Ryan Adams. There will always be, like, these Dave Grohl people in the world.
Yeah, I have to
keep, like, reiterating that.
You have to admit, like, Dave Grohl has lightened up, and he had the whole he sort of went on a tirade about
Sonic Highways.
Yeah, and now, I mean, I can't like slander him here on this Billboard podcast. So
still like the guy.
He's gotten better about it. So
that's true.
I don't know. No shade, Dave Grohl. I don't want to beef with you.
Yeah, I mean, the rockism, I definitely see it being very much pushed out of criticism and people in the media. So you would think that, like, for the masses, that will follow suit. It won't happen as quickly as it is with people who are, like, actually working in the industry, devoting their lives to this. But
yeah.
It's on its way out. It won't be completely gone, but I think, like, with just, like, your average music listener, your average kid or teen these days, they don't care about genres. They'll, like, go to a festival like Governor's Ball and see Deadmau5. And also enjoy seeing someone like Lana Del Rey. Like, they're like, oh, I'm just an EDM person. Like,
yep,
totally.
The kids are smart.
The kids, yeah. The kids are forward thinking. I'm hopeful. Mm. Yeah.
That's why they're okay with seeing Fall Out Boy and Wiz Khalifa on the same stage this summer.
Yeah, they are.
Ooh, they're better than me in that way.
And Fall Out Boy is to close off the discussion with, like, the hip hop and, you know, rock artists with other genres. Fall Out Boy is another one that tries really hard
for it. They do.
I have mixed feelings on their most recent album, like some songs more than others on it, but Wiz Khalifa fucks with them. Like, rappers, if you look at, like, Pete Wentz's Instagram, rappers love those guys. Like,
yeah, I mean, they have big personalities. Well, Pete does, you know, and
thank God that band has Pete.
I love Patrick, though.
They're,
like,
super talented, but
incredible.
The band wouldn't have gotten, like, what we've seen, the celebrity. It wouldn't have gotten there without Pete.
Yeah, totally. I
hope it's going to be, like, a trend, because you know how Good Charlotte just did that song?
Oh,
like,
yeah,
Waka?
The Madden Brothers, yeah.
I, like, hope it, like, this is a reoccurring thing. Like, I would love, like, Simple Plan to be with a rapper.
Because I think a lot of rappers, because if you're more wrapped up in the hip-hop world, you haven't been getting beat over the head with, like, rockism for all these years. So maybe you are more open to, like, oh, cool, like, I'm Kendrick Lamar. Yeah, I'll do Imagine Dragons at the Grammys. Yeah, that's cool.
No, you can't defend that, though. That was
I was just saying what his mindset was. I was not defending Imagine Dragons.
I mean, come on. That wasn't Kendrick being like, man, I fuck with Imagine Dragons. That was
it was the Grammys,
like,
but he
being,
did it.
Like, good
he
brand it, alignment. Good thing the Grammy wants me to do. Like,
I didn't hate it.
I mean, he will collaborate with pretty almost anyone. I mean, he was on Robin Thicke's album, the Blurred Lines album.
Oh, well, that was when Robin Thicke wasn't so hated. So that was okay.
Yeah, but he was still Robin Thicke.
Yeah, but that was before Kendrick really I don't know.
Yeah.
We have to look at what Kendrick's going to do moving forward. I kind of can't believe he was on the Bad Blood whole thing, but that's another podcast.
Ten years from now, Kendrick will probably still be a huge star, and there's going to be a great list of, like, 10 collaborations you won't believe Kendrick Lamar did.
I feel like you could do that now.
Although, the one I love to whip out now is Kanye West was in a Hoobastank video, like, 10 years ago.
What?
It was their video for Out of Control. The theme of the video is they're, like, auditioning, like, new singers from, like, different genres.
Oh,
and
God.
He's, like, the rap guy who comes on and, like, rocks out with Hoobastank.
That's incredible.
That happened, and that is on
YouTube.
Does
he play guitar, or does he, like, sing? What does he do?
I don't remember. It's not long, but I think he's just singing. There's no guitar, but I think he's, like, singing and, like,
rocking out. That's incredible. I love that fact.
I am always just trying to raise awareness that is out there. That is out there. Anyway.
Yeah, what are we on to next? What are we getting into?
Jill, I wanted to get into the piece you wrote for Flavor Wire, which I really enjoyed, about the women in rock music now. All these great these great lady rock musicians.
Yeah, but don't call them that. It's so complicated because I think that the people who are making the best rock music right now are women, young women. But it's not. I feel very conflicted about
because it's like
about pointing that out. Yeah. Because it's counterproductive.
Like, because you want to point it out, but like what I just said, like in order to like make the point and like say what it is, you sort of have to say female rock musicians. But the minute you say it, it's like that's whack.
Yeah, you silo them. You don't put them in the main sort of conversation and act like they're on the same level. They're not on the same level in the sense that they're kicking everybody's ass.
Yeah.
So mm-hmm. good for them. But thank you for bringing that piece up. It meant a lot to me. I talked mostly about Speedy Ortiz and the new Torres record and the new Courtney Barnett record and
Waxahachie,
and Alabama Shakes in that in that piece. I think the main thing that it sort of boils down to is we've had this like extraordinary crop this year of female driven rock and roll. And some of it navigates the experience of being female and confronts that. And some of it doesn't. Mm-hmm. And I like that there's a lot of variety because, you know, I think when alternative had a female fronted boom in the 90s, with people like Liz Phair and Hole and, you know, Fiona Apple was often Alanis lumped into Morissette. That. Alanis Morissette, even though Fiona and Alanis were a little more pop, you know, branded at first. And PJ Harvey, tons of amazing, amazing women, amazing musicians, not women, they're people. Mm-hmm. And their gender was just pointed out at every turn. And a lot of the music did really confront femininity. But now I think there's a little bit of a like post-feminism happening where people like Courtney Barnett and Alabama Shakes are not writing music that has to do with their gender. Their gender is not really a part of it. And I think that's great. I think it's really good, this idea that because something is made by a woman doesn't mean it's for a woman. It's for everyone. But most of these women, I think the main thing is they're incredible lyricists. I think rock has some of the best lyrics that it's had in a while this year.
Definitely.
Yeah, that Speedy Ortiz record has some like incredible lines. And Sadie, their front woman, just got her MFA in poetry. And you totally see it in all the lyrics. They're incredibly evocative in their imagery. Torres also has really, really good lyrical storytelling. And she gets into some uncomfortably personal stuff about sort of abandoning her religious upbringing and coming to terms with her identity and outside of that and within that. And that's one of my big points is like lyrics in rock are usually pretty abysmal a lot of times. I'm not going to lie.
And it seems like for like a guy, like a guy rock band, a band with all dudes or a dude lyricist, it seems like because so much has already been said before by guys in rock, they in a lot of ways they couldn't even be writing these lyrics.
Well, it's sort of a weird extension to something that I think we see going on in the literary world and the media world, which is this idea that women are just sort of coming to their true platforms and their so many voices were so repressed for so long that like all the best writers that are working, all, you know, so many like thought leaders, it's women and it's perspectives that are slightly different, you know, women and people of color, you know, marginalized voices. And I think that is having a little bit of a trickle down effect in a male dominated genre like rock.
Yeah, because, I mean, so much of, like, being in the discussion is being, like, progressive in some way, being edgy or cool or whatever you want to call it. And it's, like, I feel in a lot of ways, like, when you just, like, get a press release and look at, see, it's just, like, a band of all white dudes, it's, like, wow, you really have to come correct and do something interesting to, like, make yourself, like, part of that. Because, you know, it's, like, what are you going to hang your hat on if like, that's, like, what...
Yeah, I feel it's also like kind of a hard spot to be in, though, because I don't know. People can't help what they're born into, exactly, and who yeah. they are and what their ambitions are and what kind of art they want to make, you know? So yeah, it's a dicey time.
Yeah.
But it's an interesting time, you know? Yeah.
But yeah, I also think, like, as an artist, you kind of have to accept that so much of it is out of your control as to, like, what critics think of you and as to, like, if people choose to put you in this discussion that we're talking about.
Yeah.
And, like, that's the part of it where it's, like, what you're born as. Like, if there really isn't anything, like, that interesting coming from, like, rock guys these days, and if, like, people are paying less attention to it, it's, like, you kill it on your own. You make music that you love and that you're into. But some like parts of like criticism and like top 10 lists, like you just can't control that.
You can't, but I just think as an artist, you also can't pay that much attention to it. And I realize that's so hypocritical because I'm sitting here and like that's what we all do.
Yeah, we're discussing our favorite albums of the year.
Yeah, but it's so, I get nervous that great art will not be made because everything is so under the microscope and commented on. And, you know, if artists have any sort of thin skin, like social media will just
exactly
kill it.
Artists are sensitive people. I think about that too.
Yeah.
Like there could be the most innovative rock record in the world and we'll never see it.
Yeah. Because someone's too
someone's
afraid.
Terrified.
Yeah, totally. That's why I'm so impressed with extreme vulnerability, like the Sufjan record or the Father John Misty record, or the Torres record, or the Speedy Ortiz record, like, just vulnerability, and I think part of it is the mashup of, like, especially in something like Speedy Ortiz, like, how the hard and soft, that's such an intoxicating mixture in rock and roll, is when you get somebody who is so laid bare, and then it's so aggressive and distorted and ugly, you know, on the musical side. But I feel like we're in a good time for music like that right now, you know.
Yeah, I think a lot of this can come out because guitar music has been so far away from like the pop songwriting game, from major labels dangling offers for some time now, that it's in some ways that's bad. But the flip side is what you're saying, Jill, is that because there isn't any pressure to conform to something and like you're not chasing some sort of cash cow, that you can be really vulnerable and really just write openly. And that's the fertile ground now.
I hope it is. I hope that's what a non-radio driven genre is. You know?
Because like you could compare it to like college rock or post-punk in the 80s, where like all of what was building up to Nirvana was just so much music that was not getting paid attention to by the mainstream. So it could be weird on its own.
Yeah, totally.
And I don't think there really would ever be like a new Nirvana now. So I don't think there really is even like a
danger. Question was going to be like, do you think there's going to be a moment where everyone's really going to be like, okay, get this on the radio?
No, maybe there's no zeitgeist is such a nebulous idea. There's no monoculture now outside of like songs of the summer and things that top the Hot 100 and like Taylor Swift. Like there's no dominant monoculture with music, you know?
So before we break, let's go around the room, around the table. Favorite songs, albums of the year so far, or what you're looking forward to? Jill, we'll start with you.
I am completely obsessed with the Sleater-Kinney record. That's no surprise for anyone who knows me. I'm still obsessed with it. It was released in January, and I was just listening to it today. That opening track, Price Tag, is money. It is, like, no pun intended, but there we go. Perfect record that is just... It hits so many notes of like power and aggression, and like it releases endorphins in me in a way that I kind of only get from really bombastic Drake tracks. This sort of instant power, like Nicki Minaj, like Sleater-Kinney to me are rock and roll Nicki Minaj, or Nicki Minaj is rap Sleater-Kinney, I guess we should say. Let's give credit.
Yeah,
to
you got
it.
Yeah, who came first? Got to give credit where credit's due.
I'm also really loving the new Unknown Mortal Orchestra record, Multi-Love, which if you're a person like me who still gets the Of Montreal Outback Steakhouse jingle in your head, then you will love this record. It's their third record. It's written about the frontman Ruben's accidental dabble with polyamory. But it is not a freak show. It is not like a TLC docu-series in an album form. That's not the point of it.
Yeah.
It is real and complicated and messy and loving and sad, and it's like twice, double the breakup record. But it is so funky. I can't even tell you. Like, it's got that sweet and sour thing that I'm just... Whew. And then also on the sweet and sour note, I am looking forward to the new Mac DeMarco mini LP, which is really good. It comes out in August. It's like a sad dude record. It's like a jealous guy, John Lennon sort of thing.
Sad boy.
Yeah, I mean, it's a bit of a breakup record, but then they got back together, so there's a happy story. But he sort of takes his salty guitar tone to its most extreme heights, that I think he's going to have to do something new now.
Yeah.
And then I'll also say, like, the new Beach House record is beautiful. Very
Depression Cherry.
Depression Cherry.
Feel nice and depressed. Yeah. But in the best way.
Yeah. Yeah. Totally. So for me, that's kind of what I'm on right now. Yeah.
Cool. Cool. I'll jump in next, and Jill, if you have to bounce.
Yeah.
So lately, I've been on this new Health record. You would all.
I haven't listened to it. No, but everyone's telling me, like, even people who don't like Health are into this.
Oh, really? So yeah. Lots of people have been talking to you about this.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, the album is it's their first album, and I believe since 2009. So it's been a minute, and it sounds kind of like if you took the aesthetics of Yeezus,
okay,
mixed it with, like, industrial, which has kind of been on, like, Health steez since they've been around, and, like, mix that with rock music, which is, like, what I've been saying with, like, rock has to, like, do interesting things, like, more so than ever to provoke now, yeah. And I think it does that.
But not in Nine Inch Nails way.
Yeah, I mean, like, that's a good point. And maybe it's just because, like, it's been a minute since, like, Nine Inch Nails was huge culturally.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I guess, so when I hear those signifiers, I think of hip-hop and Yeezus.
Yeah.
Because I wasn't, like, bumping Pretty Hate Machine.
Yeah.
You know, I'm too young for that, so,
but also, yeah. I think, like, Yeezus is the most interesting, like, album to deal with many of those industrial sounds. Like, even more so than industrial music right now, which is pretty interesting.
Hmm. Yeah, so Health is up there, and that album hasn't come out officially yet, but that one will probably be somewhere on my year-end lists. Jill already went through Sleater-Kinney, In Love with the Album. Don't think we really need to harp on that too much.
Yeah.
Ray Srimmer, not an Alt in Our Stars typical artist, but I love that album. I just had this French duo called The Doe on my podcast yesterday. I like their album a lot. Screaming Females, another good one to throw out there. I think the album has been hated on by some of, like, their more, like, old school fans, but I think the album's fantastic.
But then everybody loves the Taylor Swift cover that they did for AV
exactly.
Club. So
I wouldn't say fans. Hated on. I would say, like, more just, like, lukewarm.
Yeah.
Maybe just because, like, they've been with them for so many albums. But I think the album, it's a little bit more polished than their past stuff, and I think some people were kind of cold on that, but I like it because it kind of took things in a new direction for them. Because even though, like, they have been making great albums for a while, kind of, like, samey great albums.
Yeah, definitely.
But, like, the songwriting is really, really strong. The production hits you really hard. It's good stuff. Yeah, Courtney Barnett. Have you heard the Holly Herndon record?
I haven't. I like some of her stuff, but I don't know. I didn't really think if it was for me, but...
Yeah, I could see her for a lot of people being the sort of artist who it's more like, I would rather just, like, hear an interview with her or read an interview with her than, like, it's like, takes being in the right frame of mind to really fuck with it. To, like, because
is it, like, a straightforward noise record? Like, what is it?
It's lots of strange electronic sounds, or what would be strange to most people.
Yeah.
There's vocals in it on some of the tracks, but they're kind of mixed in, like, a non-traditional way. There's really trippy spoken word tracks on it. It's interesting.
Yeah. Sounds cool.
There's this band Algiers, who are a new Matador band who I'm actually seeing tonight. They're very interesting. Writing something about them today, actually. We were talking about, like, the issues of femininity popping up in rock music and how that can be really interesting. They bring a lot of racial issues into rock music, which I think is, like, super, super lacking.
Yeah.
You know, you hear it all over, like, hip-hop and, like, some pop music, but, like, hearing those perspectives in, like, a band signed to Matador, I think, is really interesting.
Yeah, it's really interesting that you say that, because, like, many moons ago, I was going to bring this up, because, like, I love the Girlpool record, which just recently dropped. A lot of their songs, they tried to like touch on racial issues, even though they are both white women. But it never really comes across because people like to, I think, focus on one issue, one type of marginalized
it's like
voice
you're,
at a
you're
time.
You're just one kind of band. You're, so you're a like, women band.
Yeah, it's like you are the right girl revivalist. Yeah. You can't talk about anything else other than female issues. So it is kind of interesting. I hope we can kind of blur boundaries in the future. But whatever it takes, I'm here for it.
Yeah, and for favorite songs of the year, Maria, I know you rep this band hard. Mack the Verskan.
Oh, Mack Haverskan.
Oh, I wasn't even close.
Yeah, well, it's spelled like you just break it up. Like, Macht is Swedish for power.
Macht. It's like powerful woman, right, is what it means?
It means it's not actually a real Swedish word. It's a they took a Swedish word. No, it's okay. I like explaining this. This is fun. It's a Swedish word that originally existed, I can't pronounce for the life of me, that means like man in the position of power, and they changed it into the feminine. So
oh,
it's
I
like
see.
Woman who possesses the power, which is cool.
So what do you think about the single they put out, Witness?
I think it's great. I think everything they do is great. It's very easy to be kind of stagnant with any sort of like post-punk realm of music. But the way that they do it is so incredible. And Maya is such an incredible vocalist, like out of this world.
And it really comes across in that track.
Definitely.
Damn, it's such a good song. I was hoping that it was like part of an album coming out, but it's just like a one-off single, right?
Well, I think the weird thing with them is like they've had their last two albums out for quite some time in Europe, but now America's finally like catching on, so they're in a weird place. But I'm sure they'll be back soon and with new stuff. They write so much.
Here, let's play a little clip of this track so people know what we're talking about. Track is called Witness, and Maria, pronounce the band name one more time for me.
Mack Haverskan.
Thank you.
Cool.
So, Maria, what about you? Favorite music? What's come out already? What's coming? Singles, albums, whatever.
Yeah, I can do this. I'm a big like indie pop fan, and I think a lot of the times these albums, especially in 2015, aren't part of any like major like rock music dialogue, and they kind of get written off. I think, for example, the Eternal Summer's record from earlier this year is pretty great. Same with Home Blitz, but that's more like garage rocky. And then, of course, Joanna Gruesome, their new album, Peanut Butter, which is not as delicate indie pop, which is kind of what I think makes them especially interesting. Did you listen to that record at all?
I did, yeah, I enjoyed it.
And the single, Honestly, Dear Worse, is just it's a great thing to tell somebody who's a jerk. Because it's kind of like I've seen it all before, like you're not special. I'm also really invested into bands in like from like the Philly area. I know Stereogum, I don't know if you saw this, like a couple days ago or maybe even yesterday, published this incredible piece kind of dissecting that scene. A lot of bands that kind of could exist under the umbrella of pop punk but do something in like more of a power pop realm. It's not like Warped Tour pop punk, it's like cool kid college
like
DJ.
Yeah.
And like Katiana.
Okay.
There's a new Sorority Noise single. They're from Connecticut, but they kind of also exist in that world called Using, which is really incredible. I think their full length is going to be one of my favorites of the year. They're on Top Shelf, if you know that label. They
Top Shelf. I know
Braid
Top
and
Shelf.
And all those bands. I know you had All Time Low on your podcast, and I really like that new album. I think that they're doing something that a lot of pop punk bands, especially from the time that they kind of rose to fame in the mid-aughts, can't do, and it's find a way to sort of reinvent themselves even subtly with each record. Like the singles Kids in the Dark and Something's Gotta Give sound like they're writing songs for their audience instead of yelling about whatever girl trouble they had that week at school, which I think shows a weird type of maturity that a lot of those bands don't really seem to possess. What else? I like the new Ceremony record. you probably like it, right? It sounds
too.
Like Joy
I
Division.
Liked it too. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's a new sound for them, especially since they started as a power violence, like hardcore band, now doing things that are much more melodic. I hope people get into it. Another quality Matador release. I don't know. I think, do we want to go into other things?
Don't be held back by genre.
Oh.
I'm afraid you might be.
No, I don't know, because I also listen to a lot of pop music, so that's what I'm like super excited for. Have you, can we talk about that a little bit?
This
like
is,
Sky
this
Ferreira?
This is an open-minded pop safe zone.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yes.
Okay, now I can sit back and relax.
There's no rockists here.
There are no
rockists. No
rockists Jill here. Left, so.
Oh, I wasn't.
I'm
was
kidding.
Not...
I'm kidding. Edit that out, please.
Sorry, Jill.
Well, now I want to stick to rock stuff, though. But like the new Dive record's going to be incredible.
Very excited. Have you heard it?
I've heard a little bit of it.
Cool.
Have you heard it?
Unless they played some of it live when I saw them like 8 months ago, which I don't think they did, then no, I haven't heard any of it.
Yeah, I think it's going to be great. And I think it will be like one of those things that kind of launches them further into the mainstream than
so
they already have.
You think it's more accessible?
No, I just think that it's cool and people want a cool record
yeah,
to jam,
okay.
Especially if they end up releasing it like near the end of summer, but I feel like it's going to be a fall record.
Okay.
Sort of relatedly, very excited for the Sky Ferreira record. She, who dates Cole, the frontman of Dive, she teased Guardian a couple months ago and also like sometimes sporadically on Instagram, and it sounds really beautiful. I think a lot of pop records have kind of been like jacking her stees for a while, and I think she's coming back to take what's hers.
Hmm.
I had a conversation with a friend who compared the Brandon Flowers record to Sky Ferreira, which I thought was kind of interesting. Other stuff I'm excited for. The new Titus Andronicus album? Is that something you're looking forward to?
It's a long one. It's going to take some time.
Yeah.
Have you? I haven't listened to it, but I know I did see the track list and see like the details on it. It's a very long album.
Really? Oh, I was hoping it was just going to be like short, minute-long songs.
God, it's like 3 hours long.
Okay. Well, I'm still excited because when indie rock can feel like it's heading in the most apathetic direction, Titus is here to tell us that shit's still fucked, especially politically, since everyone seems to be so focused on social issues. Yeah, it's gonna be good stuff.
Yeah, I'm really excited for Grimes because she actually finally gave some sort of... She didn't give an exact date, but I think she said, like, August or September the album's coming.
That's gonna be awesome.
She's been stringing us along for a while.
I want a pop album from her.
Yeah, but she said the album will not sound at all like Go, the track she did with Blood Diamonds, and I was bummed because I would die to hear an entire Grimes album that sounds like that.
But, like, what about Reality or whatever?
I mean, that's cool, too. She also said it wouldn't sound like that either.
Oh, well, Grimes.
Because we've had so much, even though, like, Visions was awesome, we've had so much time to chill with that record, and we know there's so many other corners of music she could dive into.
Yeah.
I'm open-minded. She could still surprise us with something that's awesome. And
she probably will.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's such a weirdo in the best way.
Weirdos in the best way.
That's the theme of today.
Yeah. So, yeah, thanks for coming by, Maria. This is a good talk.
This was fun.
Yeah. So, yeah, that concludes another episode of the Alt in Our Stars podcast. Remember, you can subscribe to the podcast by clicking the iTunes link towards the bottom of the story. You can also go to iTunes on that same link and listen to archived episodes like the amazing all-time low episode that Maria was shouting out.
Great guys.
We had the Doe on last week. We had Wolf Alice on, another album that I wanted to point out. One of my favorite albums of the year so far. Lots of good stuff to check out there. So keep up with Alt in Our Stars. Comes out every Friday at noon on billboard.com. Until next time, have a good weekend, guys. Bye-bye. Am I its friend?